this is Lacrimosa by Mozart. It is the now favorite song, favorite piece of music by a 21-year-old filmmaker from California who says he was born profoundly deaf and never really could understand music. He didn't really hear music until he was given a new set of hearing aids. And he heard music, he says, for the very first time just last week. Now he's seeking advice on which songs to listen to next. And we are welcoming your suggestions, your recommendations. What song, what band, what type of music would you recommend that someone listen to who has been deaf until very recently? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes, I should say it's 9 minutes now past 8 o'clock on this Monday, August 13th. We will talk about the power of music and welcome your musical suggestions. For John Pollock, history instructor and pop culture expert at the Madison Area Technical College. And boy, what a hard question to answer. Someone who's been deaf for 21 years and now is able to hear music. And he wants to know, he did go on a binge, he said, apparently, and listen to a lot. But now he wants to know, what should I listen to next? But what would you recommend, John, for someone who's been deaf to listen to in terms of music?
Well, this is a real stumper. When your producer called me on Friday, I tossed out a couple ideas of songs I happen to like. And as I thought about that more and talked to some friends about it, I thought, well, it's kind of random. As a real early starting point, there's a friend of mine who suggested that he listen to the sound of a kid singing. Just a lot of little kids, even if they're not musically trained in any way, they'll just make up a song. Kids like to chant. And just as a way of kind of presenting an evolution of music from where it starts kind of naturally in people and going on, I thought that the sound of a little kid singing would be really cool. You go from that starting point, and then maybe in the progression of like a introduction to music appreciation kind of course, where you go to early Gregorian chants in the European, if you're going from a European tradition, and then go through some of the main classical composers like Mozart and Bach and so forth.
That's interesting. Do you think it would be important to kind of do a progression like that to really understand or appreciate what you're hearing?
It's funny. I mean, I didn't think about it at first. And then, several mm-hmm. people who I talked to and several people on the information that you gave me mentioned that approach. And certainly as somebody who takes a historical approach to things generally, it made a lot of sense. It would also be interesting. I mean, another way of going about it would be to look at music that does different things. So to look at sort of classical forms of harmony to start with, maybe and progression on variations of a theme, start out with something like Pachelbel's Canon, and then a song like Paradise City by Guns N' Roses. It's like a perfect 1-4-5 progression. it's really exact, and so you could see these basic principles of music theory played out. So you could kind of go principle by principle instead of sticking to a chronological order of things. Would be another way to go about it. Looking at the filmmaker's list of five of the songs that he's gone back to, it seems like it was completely random. It seems like he just kind of asked his friends, hey, what are you listening to? And they said, oh, this. And he put it on and liked it or didn't.
Yeah, and I was going to say, apparently his favorite piece of music is this Mozart piece that I just played. Is there anything particularly profound about classical music that might, appeal to someone who could never hear before?
Well, what I think would appeal about it is that you've got, unlike, say, rock and roll or other forms of music, it's really regular. You can see a pattern there. There's a mathematical logic to it. That's not going to exist as clearly in other kinds of music. I mean, music has to be some relation between it. I mean, that's the difference between music and somebody just pounding on a piano at random or blowing into a saxophone and having no idea what they're doing. It's got to have some kind of pattern. And I think in classical music, those patterns are often easier to identify. They're more in the foreground. And what modern music does is it kind of challenges that. It tries other forms of regularity that weren't there earlier. I listened to it and I thought it's beautiful. It's a nice piece of music. It didn't completely shake my world this morning, but I can see where somebody would really like that piece.
Well, I know that you've come up with some ideas, but so have many callers. So let's see what some of our callers are recommending. Lauren in Eau Claire. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I would recommend the Hallelujah Chorus from The Messiah. Actually, probably the entire Messiah is really good, but especially the Hallelujah Chorus.
Well, let's take a listen to that. And why, Lauren, are you recommending this?
It's just so classic. It's just one that, whether all walks of life, whether you love classical music or whether you don't, it's one that everyone's heard. And it's so, I just think it's profound, the choir and the orchestra in the background. So it's kind of one that you kind of got to know. That you should know.
And I suppose it could have been going through his head as he heard music for the first time, too. John, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think that the Messiah speaks to that kind of regularity. It's the harmony is very catchy. It's a very popular piece in communities around the country and around the world. It's done as a sing-along. Because it's not, the chorus especially there is not super difficult. You hear it once, you kind of know where it's going to go. For that reason, I think that would be a great early piece of music for someone to listen to once they've started hearing.
Well, what did you decide, John, when we asked you, what would you recommend that this once deaf man listen to next?
Oh, I just really, I had no idea. I mean, that question really kind of caught me out of left field. The way it was phrased, I thought, well, aren't there people who are specialists in deaf culture you could bring on who might have an idea about this? And then I realized that's not the direction it was going. The two things I tossed out there were two pop songs from the 1960s. And that was Sunday Morning by the Velvet Underground and Surfin' Bird by the Trashmen. And I think they're really interesting songs. I think Sunday Morning shows like the real potential of a pop form. I think it's a beautiful song, and it has a combination of this really, kind of standard sort of harmony, and then Lou Reed's voice on that. Lou Reed is not a great singer. He's not really classically trained in a vocalist. But it's like a human who's got an imperfect voice trying really hard to sing. And there's a certain kind of heart, there's a certain kind of love that comes out of that that I thought is really touching.
All right, let's listen to Lou Reed.
Sunday morning brings the dawning. It's just a restless feeling.
Cool. Yeah, it doesn't sound like the Lou Reed I used to know.
Yeah, no, it's very early in his career, and it sounds like he's like trying to do something he can't quite do. He's trying to sort of whisper the lyrics, and he's maybe a little bit out of his range, but he's like trying, and I think that's really like the essence of rock and roll in a lot of ways, is that it's that kind of music. Beyond the harmonies that we talked about and that you can kind of hear on that track, the other component of rock and roll is it's like the heart. It's singing from the gut. It's trying to get something across. It's very emotional kind of music. And I think it's harder to convey that kind of emotion in classical music where the goal is to really read off a score and read it correctly and play it exactly as it's written. Where Reed wrote that song and he's performing it and it's not quite perfect. And even like the recording on it, It's, you know, it's kind of fuzzy. It's like from a recording engineer point of view, it's not a perfect recording. And that also, I think, speaks to this kind of emotional side of music that you especially get in modern music, that that it's people trying really hard to get something across, even if they don't quite have all the tools to do it.
Mm. Now, why Surf and Bird?
Well, Surf and Bird goes like another direction. And, you know, I'm a percussionist by training, which is why it's really hilarious that I'm on here talking about music theory. But Surf and Bird, you have this, you know, it's even a more stripped down kind of record, and you've got this kind of gibberish passage in the middle of it. And it shows how, I think, how these kind of random sounds can nonetheless be transformed into music, that you can get music out of all kinds of different things, and that it doesn't have to, you know, the lyrics don't even have to be words in any particular language.
All right, let's listen.
Well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird, bird, bird. Bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird. Well, a bird is a winner. Well, a bird, bird. Bird's a winner. Well, a bird, bird, bird.
Yeah, you can't help but smile when you hear that either.
That's my point, is that you hear that, and especially if somebody had, if maybe that wasn't their first song, but they had heard these really well-crafted and theoretically perfect pieces, and then they heard this, that song's going to get stuck in your head. I mean, in some ways, a song like that returns us to like the little kid singing. It's just somebody is they have this idea, and they're kind of chanting it over and over again. In this case, they're chanting it with some accompaniment. And why do humans need to do that? You know, people other than me would have more idea of why exactly that is. But if you're trying to introduce someone to music, I think a song like that gets at some of the possibilities of it, that take us beyond traditional music theory.
So what kind of music would you suggest to someone who was once deaf but can now hear? That's what we are talking about during this hour. We're welcoming your suggestions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine with John Pollock, history instructor, pop culture expert at Madison Area Technical College. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. That is a Sausalito Summer Night by Diesel. This is a Bill Martin's pick. This is what he would recommend that this 21-year-old filmmaker who was once deaf but now has new hearing aids and can hear music for the very first time. Bill says he ought to listen to Sausalito Summer Night. And John Pollock, do you know what's wrong with Bill? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it's funny. So when Bill called and he asked me this question, and I was kind of, you know, didn't know what to say, and so he tossed this out. I said, oh, so what's your song? And he said, oh, Sausalito Summer Night by Diesel. And I cracked up because they're this one-hit wonder band. This is, I think, their only hit in the United States. I think they're from the Netherlands or something like that. And it was this really big pop song right around 1980. And I think the, you know, why that might be, what it might actually be kind of an instructive song, especially for this person's from California, so we assume his first language is English, that it also shows the way that English is spoken around the world, and that English, especially in popular music, shows up around the world. That if you listen to South Korean music or Chinese music, much less popular music from Europe, that there's the song's going to be all or partly in English, many of them. And that song's a case in point. It's people singing about a city in Northern California that they probably hadn't been to at the time that they wrote it. It just kind of sounded good to them, and they wrote the song around it. And it's also, I mean, this band would have been recording in the wake of ABBA from Sweden, a band that recorded entirely in English, even though none of them spoke it. They had to transliterate it. It was like transliterated English written as though it's Swedish. So a song like that would be a way of showing the dominance of English in international popular music.
And Bill says that that reminded you of Word Up by Cameo. Let's take a listen to Word Up by Cameo.
It's just, yeah, I mean, the main reason it reminded me of it was just, you know, a popular song from that same period. I mean, also, another thing I think that Word Up tells us about, and that would be useful for someone who's hearing music for the first time, is it's like the potential of the human voice, that Larry Blackmon, who's the lead singer of Cameo, the way that he's able to bend the notes the way he does, he sings in this really, it's another way that pop music, you can take a sound that otherwise would not be pleasant and make it pleasant. I mean, if you think about it, he's a really nasal voice there. He's mm-hmm. really, you know, it could be kind of grating even in conversation, but in a song it works. He's able to use that and really make it part of the song. And it's you know, for people of around my age, it's this kind of cultural signifier. It comes on the radio and it's, oh, turn that up. So yeah, another mostly just an example of the era that I put into kind of one up Bill.
All right,
but yeah, a great song.
We have lots more callers, so let's go next to Jason in La Crosse. Hello, Jason, you're on the air.
Hello, John. Good morning.
Morning.
My suggestion was to listen to turntablists and DJ teams, and I did when I was speaking to the screen caller. I did think of a track and a specific DJ, and I just think for the ears, it's quite stimulating to hear how vinyl can be manipulated to present very unique sounds. Oh. It's a percussive instrument, so it's a coincidence that the host is a percussionist. I am too, not by trade. But I think I've got a couple of recommendations. One specific track is Skanky Panky from Kid Koala. Filipino DJ from Canada. And there are several DJ teams, two on the West Coast, the Beat Junkies, the Invisible Scratch Pickles, and a UK group is the Scratch Perverts, and in France is a group called C2C. So I think that would be something very unique for this young man to listen to.
All right, interesting. And I'm trying to. That's the scratchy stuff we're talking about.
Yeah,
John?
Yeah. So you've got someone who's set up with two or more turntables and vinyl records on them, and they take you know, as they move the record back and forth, you hear like little bits of different songs played forwards and backwards, but it's just in little snippets. It's often turntablists initially were part of hip hop. As one of the instruments that you would hear, you'd have other synthesizers, keyboards, occasionally a live percussion of some kind, and also a turntablist. And what the caller's talking about is what's happened now is turntablists have become really like solo musicians. They've become really kind of featured. And what you really hear in the mix is the scratching on the turntables, and then other stuff is kind of behind it. I think that'd be great. I think what you'd want to do would be, as you're introducing people to music for the first time, talk about different kinds of technology, which I didn't even think of. And again, I'm just thinking in a sort of evolutionary approach, start with live performance of various kinds and go to, you could probably skip, you know, Edison wax cylinders and things like that, but get on to, you know, start with vinyl. So that not only would they get the different kinds of music, but they'd hear how music sounds similar and different in different media, whether it's broadcast, whether it's played on a record, whether it's on a cassette tape, whether it's on a CD, an MP3. It would be fascinating to see if somebody who's just hearing for the first time and presumably would have somewhat more sensitive ears than those of us who've been exposed to sounds for decades, if they could pick up differences between something recorded on MP3, recorded on vinyl, and so on, and then turntablists, where you take the medium and make that the instrument, that would be a great thing to introduce once they had those concepts kind of together, once they'd heard them.
Interesting. Jason, thank you very much for that suggestion. Now, here's a suggestion that I saw on some social media sites, and it happens to be the suggestion that producer-director Amanda Magnus thought that this young man should listen to this song next.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Something
thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Galileo,
Galileo,
Galileo Figaro,
Magnifico.
So that is that a rock opera? What is that?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. It's Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen. I think it's a great example of there's a musicologist Rob Walser who's out at UCLA who I had a class from when I was in college. He wrote a book about on the history of heavy metal. And he said that it was kind of a combination of blues and classical. If you kind of mash those together, that's what you'd get. And I think Bohemian Rhapsody is an excellent illustration of that, that it's got kind of a blues progression, but it has all these classical touches to it. It would be a great thing to play for someone once they had heard, you know, maybe after like the Messiah, after they had sung the Messiah and heard that. To hear how rock and roll takes that and kind of plays with it. And also in that song, there are multiple parts to it that have these kind of antecedents in other kinds of music. Yeah, one of my son's friends actually suggested that also, so that would probably be a very good choice.
Yeah. Brian in Madison is with us now. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Joy. John, it's your neighbor, Brian.
Hey.
after all this talk of Sausalito Nights and Word Up and all that good stuff, and I'm not a sophisticated music guy, but I would recommend things that sort of move you or continue to put goosebumps up my spine, things like Yitzhak Perlman doing Adagio for Strings or Gershwin's some Gershwin stuff, Appalachian Spring by Copland. So things that, you know, doesn't matter how many times I hear them, they sort of just stir emotion.
All right, John?
Yeah, I think that's a great recommendation. That if the music does that to you, then if this person were a friend of yours, there's a good chance that they would have that also. And I think also a part of music is talking about it. That I think the, you know, part of why we like a particular kind of music often has to do with the circumstances where we hear it. That if we know that someone is a huge fan of a kind of music, if they can talk about why they like this music so much, why it moves them, then I think that it's a very persuasive kind of thing for other people. And I think those choices are, I think those are great. I think those are I was thinking about Adagio for Strings, actually, as another one that's a very stirring piece of music. So, yeah, those are great ideas.
Thank you, Brian. Now we go to Mike in Wisconsin Dells. Hello, Mike.
Yes, good morning. I was just thinking of all the wonderful music that people are bringing. One of the ones that's kind of touched me and my wife is Ave Maria. That's kind of traditionally Christmas, but my daughter lost her husband at 9/11 at Ground Zero. He was a firefighter, and we went out there on December to be with her for Christmas and saw that performed in a cathedral not far from Ground Zero, a Catholic church not far from Ground Zero. And it was the most moving piece I probably to this day have ever heard, and you could hear a pin drop for all the hundreds of people that were in this beautiful church not blocks away from Ground Zero when this was played. It was just amazing.
Oh my goodness, how powerful. And I'm very sorry for your loss, Mike. Let's listen to Ave Maria.
Ooh, my head.
Well, that sounded like a part of Ave Maria and somebody else singing on top of that. That sound like that sounded like Louis Armstrong or somebody. But there we go. Unfortunately, not the chorus part. But your thoughts on this, John?
Yeah. Well, what struck me about what the caller said is it has to do with the place where you hear something. That I think just as we've talked and the callers have brought up lots of different individual songs or genres of music, and we were talking a minute ago about different musical technologies and the media by which we hear music. I think place would also be important. I think it would be pretty vital to take someone who is just learning to hear to different venues to hear music performed. I mean, a cathedral is a wonderful place. I mean, I think that's a big part of why cathedrals were built, were to give that acoustic resonance and to induce a certain feeling in people. And then it'd be also great to have them on a front porch playing music, where it's a different kind of ambiance and a different kind of music is going to be played there, or a nightclub in a basement somewhere. That hearing music performed in different places brings something to the music. And the cathedral example, I think, is a great one. That would definitely need to be on their list.
Yeah. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Pollock. He is a history instructor, pop culture expert at Madison Area Technical College, also a musician. And we are talking about music and the music we would recommend to somebody who used to be deaf but now can hear for the very first time and wants suggestions on the types of music that he should listen to. This is a 21-year-old filmmaker from California who got some new hearing aids just last week, and it allows him to hear music and to fully appreciate music. And he put the word out on social media that he wants suggestions on types of music, genres of music that he should listen to. And we're talking about that this hour. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You know, John, I just took an informal workshop called The Power of Music and How Music Can Influence Our Moods and How Music Can spark creativity in our minds and all sorts of the benefits of music. And it really, the homework assignment I was given was to listen to just anything and everything. Listen to different genres of music that I don't typically listen to. Try to find something new. Try to listen to music from different periods in time and throughout your lifespan. And I just thought I wanted to just get your thoughts on the power of music.
Whoa. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a powerful thing. I think it is music often works as a mood enhancer, mm-hmm. Or a way of kind of diverting yourself from something to either, if you're down listening to a piece of music that's really upbeat and catchy, to kind of change your mood and make it happier. Or conversely, when we encounter an especially mournful passage of music, it kind of jolts us out of our everyday and gets us thinking about parts of life that aren't as sunny, that we don't necessarily want to think about all the time. I think playing music also. I think being surrounded by other people who are playing music and having your sort of resonating through your body is a very it's a really powerful sensation. Whether that's playing an instrument, whether it's singing, being in a space where there's several people doing that in concert, I think inspires a kind of connection that's hard to get otherwise. When I sit in with a band I used to be with, and I don't remember exactly how the song goes, but yet I'm able to play it. And I know when to stop, and I know when to start back up, just by looking at the eyebrows of the leader of the group. That's a really great feeling. It's really powerful to be able to do that. I think music has this huge power. And again, it's just I wish I had, more of my research was actually on how music affects people rather than on like how music is made and who makes it. So I could offer more illumination on that.
Right. I would think that it depends on what this young man, what he's in the mood for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, the list that he provides and his feedback with the people who commented on his blog, it seems like he's very definitely searching, which is great. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, at any age, that's a great thing to be able to do, to be constantly investigating new kinds of music and see what you like.
Let's go to Marcella in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. Hi, my suggestion was to look up the music that we decided to send into space in Voyager, I think in 1977. So what our culture decided to send out there to possibly other cultures that have never heard us before.
Yeah, I guess I don't know what that is, but that would be be interesting.
I remember hearing that. I think there was some Beethoven in there. It would be very funny if it was like The Hustle or Convoy, songs that were on the charts at that point. That would have been kind of great.
Yeah, or what I heard over the weekend, I had my 1977 high school reunion, 35th class reunion. So I was hearing some ABBA and disco and all sorts of stuff out there. Yeah, hopefully not that. Let's take a listen to another selection. This is Rob Ferret's selection for what he thinks this young man should listen to.
I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
Yeah, it's a cool song.
Yeah, no, it's another great one. It's also it's a song you just want to kind of clap or snap your fingers along to. It draws you in that way. It's the way that Otis Redding repeats sitting on the dock of the bay. You want to, you know, sing along with it after once you're a couple minutes into it. And of course, certainly here in Madison, where Otis Redding died in 1967, I think the city has a special attachment to that song. So that's, it'd be another thing to consider that, wherever the filmmaker is from, that would be something that I think would be worth patching into, is figure out, well, what are the songs associated with that area, whether they were produced there, whether they have some connection to it, and listen to that. So you get an idea of the relationship between the place and the music.
Lynn in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Joy. Good morning, John. My suggestion is, and that voice you heard over Ave Maria was Tom Waits. I love Tom Waits. On the Blue Valentine album, he does a rendition of Somewhere from West Side Story. So that would be the wonderful, smoky, sweet voice of Tom Waits and an example of classic American musical theater. That's my suggestion.
All right. Let's listen to Tom Waits without Ave Maria. Let's take a listen.
The place was somewhere, a place was.
Yeah. What an interesting voice.
Well, Tom Waits is another example of that kind of imperfection that I think is really great about modern music. That. I mean, he's in his recording career, he's gone all over the place, and especially since the last like 20 years or so, he incorporates a lot of noise into his songs. He's got he often sings through a megaphone when he performs live and on record. He's got all kinds of distortion, all kinds of distortion in the guitars and other instruments. You hear like kind of toy instruments sometimes, like toy piano and so forth. So Tom Waits, I think, is a real expert at his voice on there. It's a beautiful voice, but it's a really unconventional one. It's this pitch kind of, goes all over the place. So I think he's a great example of someone who's able to make music, out of all kinds of seemingly random materials. And I'm sure it's not random. I'm sure he spends a huge amount of time in the studio getting the right sound and practicing. And I've been fortunate enough to see him live and as a live performance. It's one of my favorite shows ever. But he's very, very noisy in a traditional sense. But as you listen to it, you realize, no, it's really planned to sound like that. And it winds up, he really brings a great deal of heart into his music, even though he also has a very unconventional voice.
I'm Joy Cardine with John Pollock, and we are talking about music. We're talking about what song or band or music genre you would recommend that someone listen to, especially someone who hasn't been able to listen to or appreciate music in the past. We're talking about this 21-year-old filmmaker from California who was born deaf, but just recently was given hearing aids, so he is able to hear and appreciate music. And he's asking, what music should I listen to? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. That's interesting. That is A Bad Place by Minnesota, and that is one of the favorite pieces of music that 21-year-old Austin Chapman says is among his favorites. Austin Chapman is this filmmaker we've been talking about all hour who just recently got some hearing aids, and he is able now to hear music. He said he gorged on music and has been listening to everything and anything he can, and he put out the word that he wants to know what should he listen to next. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Pollock about this question. And what do you think of that? A Bad Place by Minnesota. What do you suppose appeals to him about that?
Well, I think it's similar to what appealed to the caller who talked about turntablists, that it's really it's electronic sound, it's very synthesized. It's a regular rhythmic pattern. It sounds fairly minimalist. It sounds like almost something that could be on in the background. Chapman in his blog post talks about just it turns out that he has his hearing aids off a good deal of the time, that he's found he really prefers silence, and that he's easily overwhelmed by just the ambient noise of everyday life, of air conditioning systems and construction noise that's going on outside and things like that. And then he just needs to kind of, take a break from it. So it sounds like that piece is kind of it's kind of in between. It's kind of it almost sounds like everyday life. It sounds it's doesn't really have a tune. It's not something that's catchy that you're going to walk out of here humming. But it's also predictable. It's not as loud as the other ambient noise of everyday life. And maybe that's the attraction.
Very interesting. Never thought of that. Diane in Madison. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
What do you recommend?
I recommend Bach's Goldberg Variations.
And why?
With Glenn Gould. Glenn Gould was a quirky piano player. He's Canadian. His story is in a film that was out a few years ago. Anyhow, the Goldberg Variations, he first recorded them in 1955 at Columbia Masterworks in New York. That apparently was an old church that had spectacular acoustics. And Bach's work, there's 30 variations on a theme, and it gets progressively more and more complex, very arithmetic, very, Bach is the logical, beautiful piano composer, and I think if he doesn't like ambient noise, I have hearing problems too sometimes. This is such pure sound. It doesn't have any ambient background. It doesn't disambient, shall we say, background noises. And he recorded it again in, 1981 at the last recording that he never reported. I'm babbling.
No, I don't mean to jump
you know what
in,
I mean?
But we don't have a selection. I was waiting to see if we could, but we do not have an example of that to play. So, John, maybe you can just react.
Well, I think the caller gets at a couple of points. That number one, kind of reiterating that that it's important to think about the place where music is performed or recorded has an impact on what it sounds like. And if he's performing in this old cathedral, then, yeah, that's going to bring a quality to the music that might not be there. If he's just in a recording studio with a drop ceiling and foam on the walls and things like that, you get a different sound when you hear it. And then also for Austin Chapman or for a hypothetical someone else who's got cochlear implants and is now able to hear music for the first time, hearing multiple versions of the same song, hearing multiple recordings even by the same performer. Would be kind of fascinating, I think, for that person and also for someone else, because they probably pick up differences that come up, differences in one's approach to their instrument or ways that their voice changes over the course of time. I mean, the caller was talking about two versions of the same piece recorded 20, 30 years apart. That's going to be a big change. They're not going to sound exactly the same, and someone who's just hearing is probably going to be able to grasp the subtleties there in ways that people who've been hearing and have some hearing loss over time might escape them.
Well, let's take a listen to a song I thought of when I thought of this question. Maybe Austin should Austin Chapman should listen to this.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And I think I thought of this song just because of the lyrics rather than you know, any kind of composition.
Yeah, see, and I mean, the lyrics, I think, are great, and this is the song that my sister and her husband danced to first at their wedding, so I have a strong memory of it. As I'm listening to it, though, one of the things I think of is the figure of Louis Armstrong himself. This is something, a recording he made much later in his career, and you can hear it in his voice. He's much older. It's a sound of somebody who's really lived this very exciting life, and now he's kind of in reflective mode. That I think one of the things that makes this song really powerful is if you're familiar with Louis Armstrong's earlier work in the 1920s, where it's much more upbeat, where he's doing this scat singing, which is an earlier form of taking what is essentially gibberish and making music out of it. Where he's doing that, when you hear his early recordings, he's singing in a higher register. I mean, his voice is higher. And it's more kind of speeded up and jumpy and so forth, and he really mellows out a lot over time. I think is a very powerful thing about music, that it's a document of how we all age, of how we approach things differently at different points in our life. And to hear that as sort of Louis Armstrong's swan song, and knowing the context of what he had done in the, you know, roughly 30, 40 years of his recorded music career before that, I think that really adds a dimension to the song that would be important to convey to somebody who was hearing it for the first time.
That's right. That's what I would have conveyed to him. That was great. Thanks, John. Dave in Appleton is with us. Hello, Dave.
Good morning. Segue from Lewis, I guess, into some more jazz. I would suggest two albums, Miles Davis' Kind of Blue and Dave Brubeck's Time Out.
Well, I think we have Kind of Blue ready to go. All right. So, why do you recommend that, Dave?
Well, I taught jazz history for a lot of years, and both those albums are from the same year, 1959, and I think they're very accessible to people just to dip a toe into the water of jazz, and then from there go backwards and forwards and listen to what else is out there. But plus, I love both albums.
Yeah, John, any comment?
Yeah, I agree. They're both super important in the history of jazz. I think on the two of them, I think Brubeck is, if you're starting someone off, I think that might be a illustrate more stuff right off the bat. I think Kind of Blue is great if you know some of the history of jazz that leads up to it, and Brubeck, and especially that. That album, Time Out, that's where he starts experimenting with different time signatures. He does jazz in 5/4 and 7/4 and time signatures like that. And I think that's also, I mean, partly that's how I was exposed to jazz. It was one of my dad's favorite records. My dad was a huge Brubeck fan in the late 50s and early 60s. And so I remember he would point out and say, okay, this is in 5. And he would, you know, we'd count. And it was like, wow, it's 5 each time. And you have to think a little more, think a little harder about it. I think it's harder for many of us to instinctively think in 5/4 or in 7/8 time. And Brubeck shows us how it's possible to do that. But yeah, they're both dynamite records.
Thank you, Dave. We'll go next to Tom in Janesville. Hello, Tom.
Hey, good morning. This is like really an interesting topic. I got to thinking, you know, I thought it would be kind of interesting to listen to something by, and I hope I get his name right, it's Andrea Botticelli. He's a blind classical opera singer, but he does all kinds of things, and I know he does a great version of Ave Maria. The other caller that called in earlier, I would really agree with him on that. That's a great song. But I think listening to a song by an artist who hasn't been able to see most of his life would be kind of an interesting connection.
That's a great point. I mean, it would be interesting to see if someone who had a real subtle ear, because they're hearing this for the first time, if they could discern that kind of difference, if they could see if there's a quality somehow that comes out in the music. I think that might also, seeing a Bocelli performance or seeing performances by other blind musicians might also be a very powerful thing, that to show how someone who doesn't have the use of one of the senses that many of us take for granted is nonetheless able to make music, whether vocal music, instrumental music, that would be something that especially to see live would be really striking. Because I know for my own self, I don't know that would come out in a recording. But yeah, a great observation and a very popular musician.
Thank you, Tom. Soren in Platteville. Hello, Soren. What do you think?
Good morning. I would say that there are any songs by the group named Uncle Lucius, and that's spelled L-U-C-I-U-S. They're a group of guys that are out of the Austin, Texas area, and they write about 95% of everything that they perform. Very, very good, talented group of young men, and they perform all across the country, and they're great friends of mine. They're very good artists.
All right, so let's take a listen to Everybody's Got Soul.
Hey, I got soul. You got soul.
All right, Soren. So you just think they're friends of yours, so that's why you'd recommend them.
Well, not only that, but they do write almost everything that they do sing, which means that, you know, they're definitely not cover band material. They do put a lot of time and effort into honing their skills as far as writing quality music that can get put out there so that the masses can listen to it.
All right. Thanks very much for that. Since we're so short on time, let's go to Pearl in Lake Mills. Hi, Pearl.
Hi. I'm going to suggest that they start out with very simple songs for him, like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. After all, this is where one of the songs we first learned, so that he understands the rising and the falling of these notes and the sounds. When you throw some of these other pieces at him, if he turns off his hearing aid because he finds many noises to be confusing, then why not start out with simple so that he understands what melody is at first, and then you could go on with these other songs.
That's we did touch on that in the very beginning, John, so kind of come full circle. Maybe start with very simple and move on.
Yeah, the Twinkle Twinkle does get back to what one of my friends suggested about hearing a little kid sing something, and the other caller did something that I expected my friends would have done, and they actually didn't, that I have quite a few friends who are still in bands or work in the music business in some fashion, and I figured that I would be inundated with people saying, oh, this new CD we just put out, and that actually didn't happen, but the caller did. And that's always, it's another reason we have an affinity for a kind of music. We have a personal connection to the people who make it. And so, yeah, we're going to want to promote that to everyone we can.
Yeah, we have less than a minute to go. I know what do you think Austin's going to pick as his favorite kind of music?
It's such a subjective thing, and I don't know the guy. I mean, I would have to, if he's 21, I guess of the stuff we've listened to today, and based on that one piece by Minnesota that you played, I'm guessing it's going to be more toward the turntablist kind of stuff. It seems like he's might be moving in that direction.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This has been a lot of fun, John. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for calling, Joy.
John Pollock, history instructor, pop culture expert at Madison Area Technical College. Thanks to Rob Ferret, Bill Martins, and Amanda Magnus for producing this program, and thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.